For us, when we bring something new in Islam, which is not from it, it is rejected, Allah doesn't accept it. And the Prophet ﷺ has said very clearly, مَا تَرَكْتُ شَيْءٍ يُقَرِّبُكُمْ إِلَى اللَّهِ إِلَّا وَأَمَّرْتُكُمْ بِهِ. There is nothing which will bring you closer to Allah that I left without commanding you to do it. In other words, anything which can bring you close to Allah, I have commanded you to do it. That is an act of worship. So, if we are to do anything which we feel is pleasing to Allah, which will bring us close to Allah, it must be based on a commandment from the Quran or a commandment from the Sunnah for it to be an acceptable form of worship. Otherwise, we are in fact worshipping Allah in a way which is not pleasing to Him, a way which is not acceptable to Him. So, not only do we have to be sure that all of our acts of worship are directed to Allah alone, but they have to be sanctioned, approved by Allah and His Prophet. Now this represents, these three aspects represent the fundamentals of the concept of Tawheed in Islam. The opposite of that, as I said, is shirk. That is, the worship of other than Allah, in whatever form it comes. If one denies Allah's existence, then one worships other than Allah. Because in denying the existence of God, human beings must explain their existence by giving the qualities of God to His creation. Because when you ask the atheist how we came to be where we are today, he will say, by chance. By chance. And everything, when you look into the life of the individual, everything which happens is by chance. So his whole destiny, his life, his creation, everything, his existence, is controlled by the chance. So what he has done, this is in fact Allah. But he has, in denying Allah, he now gives the powers of Allah to a blind force which he calls chance. And as I said in the lecture yesterday, all of the other religions that believe in God, in fact, worship His creation, while believing that they are worshipping God. And what they're committing in doing that is shirk, the gravest sin, the only unforgivable sin. Shirk has two aspects. The major shirk, which is the actual act of bowing, prostrating to other than Allah. And it has another aspect which is called minor shirk, or hidden shirk. And this is doing acts of worship for other than Allah. You're making salah, and the mutawwa comes in. The person who you feel is a mutawwa, you call mutawwa, a religious man. So you want to impress him on, you know, how good a Muslim you are. So your salah now, instead of being over in 1 minute that you usually finish it in, it takes 5 minutes. You're making very close. You're not doing it for Allah. You're doing it because He came in. This is hidden shirk. And this can affect us without us even knowing it. And this is one thing that we have to be very careful of. Prophet ﷺ had told us that hidden shirk
in the ummah, in the nation, in the body of the Muslim, is like a black ant crawling on a black stone in the middle of a moonless night. Can you see a black ant on a black stone in the middle of a moonless night? It's telling you that it will creep up on you without you even realizing. You may start to do something with a good intention, and that intention can change. So we have to be very careful about what we do. And this is why the Prophet ﷺ emphasized the importance of intention. إِنَّمَا الْأَعْمَالُ بِالنِّيَّةِ Deeds are judged by their intention. Before we make salah, we have to have the correct intent. Before we do any act of worship, anything which we consider to be good and important, we should try to remember Allah. Remember that we're doing it for the pleasure of Allah, so that we do not fall into hidden shirk. So this, inshallah, summarizes the concept of tawheed and shirk in Islam in a very simple fashion. In the future sessions, we will look at some other aspects of tawheed and shirk, as we look at some of the other areas which are related to tawheed, which affect our life. I will stop here now and allow you a chance to ask any questions that you would like to ask. Pardon?
There are some certain goals discussed, like on the pendulum, finding it put it on artificial. Is it suitable to that?
Well, if your intent is not to believe that this in some way, shape, or form is going to protect you, but you are wearing it for decorative purposes. And of course for males, Muslims, it's not allowed for you to use it, but it's for females, yeah. This would not in itself be prohibited. However, Islamic prohibition would be something you would avoid. Why? Because all it takes is, for example, for you to have bought it for your wife, with this the intent of it being a form of jewelry, not a thing to protect. You die, your wife dies, Satan comes to your children and say, well, to wear this to protect. That's why your father bought this for your mother. That's why your mother wore it. And they can now start doing that, thinking that it's to protect. So you can inadvertently cause people to go astray by you doing that. Other people may take your example without understanding why you are doing it. So these types of things, things which people have misunderstood or are in confusion about, as Muslims we try to avoid these areas. Things which can lead in that fashion. This is why, for example, when alcohol is prohibited, the Prophet ﷺ also prohibited the containers in which alcohol used to be kept. They were to be broken. He commanded them to break all these containers. So as a Muslim, for example, it is not acceptable for you to have a bottle which was used to carry, Johnny Walker or some, alcohol, but you're using it to keep water. It's not acceptable. Unless you have nothing else. This is desperation, or this is all you have to contain, keep your water in, so you have to use it. But to choose it, or you may find ornaments, they have lampshades where they'll take a bottle of scotch, whiskey, whatever, and they'll melt the bottle and cause it to turn into an ashtray or into a lamp or something like this. You can't keep it. You can't keep it. You avoid these type of things which are associated with the drinking of alcohol. Similarly, those types of practices, because people use the Quran and tradition, it is better to avoid it. Although I'm not saying that it's haram to keep it, I'm saying from a point of view of the harm that might come from it,
this is better to pray.
Most of our Asian Muslims in our area, they have one kind of belief. When in any house, children they have belief after a week or 15 days, they have to bring to goat or lamb and cut and this is for we call Akiga. They believe this is Sadaqa. But this meat, they divide in relative or neighbors. And after when someone dead in one area, the people what they're doing, after 3 days, they have to collect the people and they make again this kind of Sadaqa, they cook the food. And lot of people, they came around 30, 35 or 40, and they read the Quran. And they have believed that this Quran, the 30 Jews men, they're going to finish, and the person who gets, he will be get sawab from this Quran. And not only this, when after 40 days, they are going to follow same, again for same method. The people collect different place to place, and they cook food for necessary for everybody. They function, and they're reading Quran, and they believe this for sawab for 2 person who get. And during this family, they're spending a lot of money. So we actually still myself is confused how it's true or
you know. Well, the idea of aqiqah, this is based on the teachings and the practices of the Prophet on the seventh day, the 15th. But on the seventh day after the child is born, the child is circumcised, the head is shaven, the hair is weighed, value in gold is given as sadaqah, and an animal or two in the case of a male, one in the case of a female, or one also in the case of a male, possible. The animal is slaughtered, and the meat is given to the poor, some to neighbors, some eaten, whatever. This is aqiqah, this is sunnah. From
Prophet Muhammad. If somebody is not able to provide food, somebody is food.
No, you do what you can. If you cannot slaughter the animal, well then you just do the circumcision, the shaving of the head. You can't give, you cannot afford to give, so you just do the act that you're able to. You know, and also the child is named on this day. According to Prophet's practice. This is why in some countries they call it the naming ceremony. Well, the seventh day is the sunnah. However, you know, if for one reason or the other you're not able to do it on the seventh day, then on another day after that it's possible. Some recommend like the 14th, the 21st, you know, in 7 days after that. However, there's nothing Prophet said specifically. Matter of fact, he did aqiqah for himself, you know, when he was a grown man. You know, and I'm sure he didn't go to count to see was this a multiple of 7 or not. You know, he just did it. He decided he was going to do it and did it. So there's no thing about multiples. You may do this, you know, as the occasion, you know, arrives. But the preferable day is that of the 7th. So however, to set it on the 15th day, as traditionally done, say, in some countries, this is wrong. If you did it on the 15th, without the intention of setting it on the 15th, it would be okay. So once you do it believing that it's supposed to be done on the 15th because everybody else has done it, then it becomes wrong. So you see, an act which in itself may be good and acceptable, with the wrong intention it can become wrong and unacceptable. Now, in terms of when a person dies, I mean this practice which they call sometimes Khatm al-Qur'an, where they gather the people and every person takes a juz, you know, or a portion of a juz, and they're reciting the Quran all on top of each other, you know, and everybody grappling it away, nobody knowing what it means, everything. And we're saying that when you look at that and look at what we talked about concerning the recitation of the Quran and what it means to recite the Quran, you can see that this is obvious nonsense. Besides it not being from the practice of Prophet Muhammad at all, he did not do it, nor did his companions do it. Besides that, It is nonsense. It is a meaningless ritual being done which has no value. The idea of reading Quran and asking Allah to give that word of the recitation of the Quran to the person who has died, this practice, there are differences amongst the scholars as to whether it is acceptable or not. Now, if we use the basic principle that what the Prophet ﷺ commanded and what Allah commanded is what is acceptable, and what they did not command is not acceptable as worship, to apply that principle, then surely we know there is no evidence from the practice of the Prophet ﷺ nor in the Quran for the recitation of Quran and the giving of the reward to someone who has died. There is no evidence. We do know that the Prophet ﷺ had allowed people to fast on behalf of some people who were unable to fast, who died unable to fast. Okay? So here is an act of worship being done, and the reward for it is being given to someone else. The person actually who does it is also being rewarded, and this was to a relative. And this was concerning Hajj and concerning fasting. And if it were also a case of zakah, where something is owed, for you to go and pay that zakah on behalf of your father and so forth, this is known excessive. But reading the Quran or making salah, and these are the forms, these were things which were not done. Some people say, well, if we look at the general principle wherein the giving of the fasting was allowed and the Hajj on behalf of others is allowed, to say the principle from that is that doing acts of worship and asking Allah to accept it from others is allowed. Others say, well, really, this area is a shady area. It is an area which is not clear, because the Prophet ﷺ spoke clearly on one, and he didn't speak on this other. And really, it is not allowed for us to make, you know, analogies in this area, this type of thing, because these are acts of worship. You know? So, really, it comes down to yourself. You know, what you feel is good inside yourself. If you feel from the different arguments that this one seems to be okay to you, well then, you do it based on your understanding. You know, I'm not going to say do this or don't do this. But I say we have certain principles. And your safest way is to stick to those principles. That you are sure of. You know, the things which Allah commanded, the things which Rasulullah commanded, these things, you are certain, if you do them, they are accepted. And if you avoid the things which they didn't command, you are certain also that you won't fall into wrong. That is the safest path.
We are
at
the time of the Adhan.
Talking about the fortune teller, if one fortune teller can read future accurately, can they read future accurately? If they can, it is, I mean, hard for us to stop the people going to them.
Well, what we know is that even if a person has no real basis for telling fortune, and in the next session maybe we'll go into this fortune telling area in a little more detail. Even if he has no basis, if I were to just say in the room, in the masjid now, some people here today, or someone here today, his father is going to pass away soon. Prediction. It is very likely that someone in this masjid here his father is going to pass away. This is just the law of coincidences, possibilities. And people, many of the people who are involved in fortune telling, use these possibilities, these generalities. 100 people come to them, and they tell all of these 100 people the same thing. Out of the 100, 2 people, it actually happened. These 2 people, when it actually happens to them, they won't forget all of the other things that they told them, because they didn't just tell them one thing. Because the fortune teller, when he's going to tell you 100 things. Out of those 100 things, only one thing happened. And to the 100 people that he told them 100 things, only 2 people had those things happen to them. Now this is just pure coincidence. However, for those people, when that thing happened to those 2 people, they are going to swear by that fortune teller that this man, he said this was going to happen and it happened. Right? And this is how the fame of certain fortune tellers spread. And people continue to go. And this is why the Prophet ﷺ had made the punishment based on the commandments of God so severe for one who goes to the fortune teller. Because you may go there not believing and hear something which happens and then you start to believe. You see? This is why you are warned. Because this is our witness. And if somebody tells you something and it turns out to be so, you start to believe somehow this person has some, you know, means, some ability. So Islam teaches us to stay away. In the next session, inshallah, we'll go into some details, a little more details as to how those people who are actually able to do it, you know, on a consecutive and a consistent basis, how they're able to do it. Now we look at that. And this has to do really with the world of the jinn. And in the next session, inshallah, we'll look into that world because it is also related to the basic concept of tawheed, and we should understand how the world of the jinn affects us.
Okay. I have another question on shirk. Yes, I got one favor from one person. Actually, he don't do it without the will of Allah. So then my question is, to whom I should give thanks first?
You ask a living person,
yes,
to do something for you.
Yes, and he did it for me. So he did favor to me. I should give him thanks in return.
Yes.
Right. My question is, to whom I should thank first? Because he is not doing without Allah's will.
Sure, sure. I mean, Allah is the one who should be thanked first and foremost. And knowing when you thank Him, you are thanking Him for helping you through the agency of this person.
But usually it's common practice to whom I get the thanks.
To give the thanks.
Immediately I give thanks to Him. But I feel that if I give Him thanks, I'm getting shit. Because He's not doing Himself. In fact, Allah helped Him to do this.
Well, I wouldn't call it shit. It is neglect.
The small.
Yeah, it is neglect on our part, that we tend to thank the people around us without thanking Allah first. This is why Prophet ﷺ, you know, told us that whenever, you know, we give any kind of talk or we have any kind of discussion or whatever, we should thank Allah. If I'm thanking Allah, then Alhamdulillah, starting off whatever we have to say with Alhamdulillah, whatever, you know, this is ensuring that whatever other thanks we give to others, we are recognizing the thanks due to Allah above all else. Right? So we try to keep Alhamdulillah as a part of our normal conversation. It should be there. So though we might thank the person on the instant, still in our conversation we say Alhamdulillah. So we remind ourselves that really all thanks is due to Allah. But the shirk comes when we thank this person and we deny Allah's agency, that it is really from Allah. This is when it becomes shirk.